Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of The Function Call. The fun, what was that noise? I'm going to start over. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of The Function Call, the fun show about web development. On the show today, I've got Drant Glidewell.
I love GIFs.
And my name is Austin Jill.
Love it. Shots fired.
Yeah, now, I don't know. GIF. You picked up on that pretty quickly, huh?
Every time somebody says something like that, yep.
Yeah.
I'm very sensitive to that controversy.
I don't know.
Feels near, well,
yeah,
near
you've
to
got
my heart.
you got the double G right at the beginning.
My name contains three G's.
What's your middle name?
We'll
tell me it starts
it
with a G.
It does.
It starts with a G?
Yes.
Your GG, wait, your parents named you GGG?
Yes. Highly creative individuals.
Yeah. That's pretty funny. How are you doing, Grant?
I'm good.
Yeah. Oh, we got a little bit of explaining to do. We had some technical difficulties because we recorded a show last week, or we tried to. But apparently it didn't record, and we didn't have our fallback system in place. Lesson learned, have your fallbacks. But yeah, it was a good show about burnout, so I was thinking maybe we could talk a little bit about that today.
It's a good show about just deep, deep sadness and general regret.
Not wanting to do this anymore.
This topic that we discussed in the show, we basically tear it to shreds.
Yeah. No, I thought it was a good show though. Like, let's see, how do we go? I had a rough time. I was feeling super stressed with a bunch of stuff. So, and part of it is like work stuff, relationships, the whole like things within my control and things outside of my control, such as the pandemic, which I'm sure a lot of people are going through right now. And so I took one of the things that was in my control and I did something about it. I quit my job and I feel pretty good about that decision. Definitely gave me some time to drink more eggnog.
That's very important to you. Eggnog is a staple.
Dude, this time of year, I am on my third half gallon of eggnog already.
Saying that makes me question why we measure eggnog in half gallons.
Yeah.
I mean, doesn't that mean you're just like in the middle of your second gallon?
It sounds less impressive when you say it that way. In fact, I'm going to start buying quarts.
There you go. I would be on my
fifth quart? No, wait. I guess it depends how far into the third half gallon I am.
The third half gallon, which quart?
I have finished four quarts.
Four quarts.
Yes, if this was a football game, we would be done.
Isn't that quart is a quarter of a gallon?
Yeah. So two quarts per half gallon, two half gallons, four quarts. No one knows what I'm doing that's listening. I'm holding up one hand for each half gallon
with
a finger
me
on each hand.
Relearn each to count.
Yeah. But yeah, anyway, it was a good episode. Getting back to the burnout stuff. Grant, you were fantastic with some of your advice as usual, especially because you have some background in this.
Yeah, I basically said like, just
suck
it
up. Walk it off.
Yeah.
Rub some dirt on it. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Oh, yeah. Pain is weakness leaving the body.
Oh, yeah. Ooh.
I had somebody throw that out in some context the other day, and it just really bothered me. I think it was like a cycling forum that I was on, and they're like, oh, pain is just weakness leaving the body. I'm like, no, man, this is how you injure yourself. Knock it off. Listen to your body.
When I was a kid, I used to eat that up, though. We had a coach, a football coach, and Pop Warner.
Oh, wow.
That was his go-to. I was like, oh, yes, coach me. I felt like one of those guys from Mad Max spraying the silver spray in my mouth. Witness me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No, not really, but you know.
Witness me. Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will ascend. I want to see little Austin running around spraying silver spray paint in his mouth.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a fun childhood.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Burnout's a tough one because I think there's like a lot of individual factors, and I think there's a lot of like systemic factors at play. And I think like the industry at large is partially to blame for some of the attitudes that we take into work. And then there's obviously like, well, okay, maybe not obviously, but there are also cultural, like in the United States, systemic factors that glorify overwork in general. And so like these are all problems that compound what is essentially very like personal feelings, and then we get really confused, like, you know, why do I feel this way? Why aren't I excited about this thing that I was excited about? Like you have like a whole, I don't want to say like a lifetime history, but like your relationship with writing code in particular that you do for a living is much deeper than mine, because I transitioned from another kind of profession later on. And so like, I think the way that we experience burnout is a bit different.
So I think you must have a good system or tool set for detecting and avoiding burnout.
Mostly it's DGAF. It's a lot of that. It's a lot of just
yeah,
like,
yeah, that's some good stuff.
Yeah. Trying to not associate who I am as a person with the work that I do, which is like the exact opposite of my previous career. My previous career as a substance abuse counselor, that kind of defined who I was. And so that was a coping mechanism that allowed me to do that work better. And so I have to do exactly the opposite in this, or else, you know, you catch fire. What's interesting is like the burnout across both of those career paths is pretty high and looks about the same, and can be like really devastating. So it's rough and it's a real thing, but it's also something I think is better mitigated and avoided before you start to feel it, rather than like, okay, I'm starting to feel bad, I need to do something about it. Like at that point, I think you're already kind of too late.
Too late.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You know, this tried and true advice for literally making anything better applies here. Exercise, watch what you eat, get enough sleep. And then, yeah, also spending time with the people that you care for. And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway,
there's no substitute for like, I think you bring up a good point there, which is like, there's no substitute for human connection, which is something that we're massively lacking in our largely remote environments that we work in, where like, it feels like we did this group event, over Slack, and it was neat, but it was just not Slack, over Zoom. Right. So it was like this event where we're supposed to connect with our team and bond over looking at street art in Buenos Aires, which is like super cool. Like there's neat stuff. But I, you know, at the end of it, it was just another meeting in my head an hours and hours long block of meetings that I was already in. So like, you know, going and being with people or dogs or whatever kind of recharges you.
Yeah, I'm it's kind of funny because you now that you mentioned it, I did something very similar, and I'm gonna share it in our links, but it was this Well, no, I guess what I'm sharing is different. But I did what I did was an escape room over Zoom. That was actually pretty fun. I think I did it last Halloween. So it was kind of this Halloween themed sort of thing. And it was kind of a choose your own adventure. But then also because it's on Zoom and everyone's participating, everyone's still, you're following kind of a linear path, but then there's like, it was kind of weird, but it was cool too. I did it with a bunch of friends. And then I also found something, I don't know, I had something bookmarked a while back that was a coding escape room that I really want to try. I think we should do that sometime.
That seems cool.
It's like, yeah, it seems like a way, it's from this website, what's it called? Codinggame.com. And codinggame.com itself looks like a pretty cool site where you learn how to code by building games, but they aren't like, I don't know, they're pretty cool looking games. Like the graphics look good, and you know, it's not necessarily one of those things that's like intended for teaching little children how to code. But worth checking out. I've shared a link. You can take a look.
This seems cool. This is a website. This is React.
Yeah, exactly. Woo. So yeah, besides the burnout stuff, like my first whole week off since leaving my job. Or I guess as of yesterday, I've had a full week off. And it was good, man. It was fun. I spent some time focusing on writing again. I spent some time focusing on a new audiobook that I'm listening to, doing some reading.
Curious George.
And just like, what's that?
Curious George.
Yeah, man. This time he goes to the zoo.
He's my favorite curious little monkey.
Yeah.
I know you like to read I want to say like deep philosophical stuff, like love language books and stuff like that. So I'm kind of curious what you're getting into.
Okay. So the big one right now is an audiobook that is by Andy Weiss. He's the guy that wrote The Martian.
Oh, nice.
The Martian was fantastic as a book. It was a decent movie. It's a great book. This book is Hail Mary. And if it has a lot of feel, it's like it's very similar to The Martian in a lot of ways. Very likable main character, very sciencey, whatever, science fiction, or like what would you call like near science fiction or near future science fiction? It gets a little bit contrived, and I'm like, it's not as good as The Martian, but it was fun. It was enjoyable.
What? I find your evaluation of like books funny.
Okay, so
I don't know why. I just find it entertaining. You're like, it's not as good as his early work.
Get out of here. Whatever, man. I'm not going to talk to you about books anymore. Let's move on to JavaScript.
All right.
Web development. Right. Yeah. So burnout is a thing. Definitely do the things that, you know.
Do better.
Yeah. Yeah, rub some dirt on it. Squirt some lemon juice in the wound. But yeah, it's also given me some time to look at some other cool stuff that I've had like floating around in my head. One of them was someone shared a CodePen recently about this concept called like islands of interactivity, something like that. And the idea is basically you can use, you kind of want to load, like create like a static website or a static page. And then as various parts of the page become accessed, or like, well, you sort of listen to different events. And then based on those events, you can dynamically or like lazily load JavaScript in response to those events to load up interactivity for different parts of the page. So think about like a button that, I don't know, just like waves a little emoji hand at you, right? And if that's like all the way at the bottom of a page and the page loads and that is not currently on the screen, you may not need that button's, you may not need to attach any sort of JavaScript to that button because the user may never get to it. So it kind of makes sense to wait until that button lands on the page to then pull down the JavaScript that would be attached to it.
Yeah. So there's, this is partially something that I've seen expressed in React via, what is their suspense? I was trying to build suspense. It didn't work.
Nice.
Well, I mean, it's taken them 2 years to get it in alpha. So
yeah, they nailed it.
I mean, it's fine. But so we also have a library that does a very similar thing called loadable components. And so like you can split on suspense, but you can also do something very similar with loadable components. And it not only doesn't load the JavaScript attached to that area, it doesn't load the React components, right? And so, you know, you can do like route-based code splitting or get down to a very granular component level code split, which I have found in just kind of digging around, like it's a little excessive if you go that far with it.
But here's the thing though, that relies on JavaScript being like the application that's running, right? Meaning, like if you want to wait until a component is loaded, it's React, or did I say JavaScript? I meant React. It relies on React being like a React application tracking what's visible. So if it's a React router, or if it's like routing, it's based on React router managing the routes, right?
Right. I mean, yes. So you're talking about JavaScript at all.
Exactly. No JavaScript unless you scroll down to a certain part of the page. So, and then it goes and gets like, let's say it's built with, let's say you're using React, then it goes and downloads the React that you need and like loads it onto the page and does the whole React mounting to the DOM.
So I don't, and I think we maybe touched on my opinion a little bit in our episode about progressive enhancement. I don't buy into this. So I think it's important to not ship a bunch of garbage bundle down to the client. I think it's important to focus on performance. I think the goal of nothing but absolutely essential JavaScript is bonkers. This is bonkers. Until the developer experience of writing that code completely abstracts that process away, which I think what you're touching on is some tooling that moves closer to that. Until that's completely abstracted away. And I think tools like Next and Gatsby and Vuext, Vext.
Someday Nuxt, you're going to get it.
I'm gonna there get, you go. I got Nuxt. I got it. I Next. Eventually
landed on it. Yes.
Nuxt.
Yes. At this point, it's Vext. Just a shtick.
But I think tooling like that could get very close.
So that tooling does exist today, right? So this was I guess the code pen that I'm talking about was in response to a conversation that happened on Speakeasy.js with the creator, I think, of Astro, the Astro framework at astro.build. And astro.build basically can take React or Svelte or Vue components, maybe some other ones, I don't know, and let you write a React component, and then you can use Astro as like, I guess, a meta framework to then say, hey, take this component, or like let's say it's a React component that builds a page. And if that page is just going to be totally static, Astro, you can tell Astro, build this component at compile time or at build time, send that as static HTML, and just don't even bother shipping JavaScript associated with it. But then maybe like halfway down that page, you can say, oh, but then on this little section, there's a button, and we want that JavaScript to be enabled in order to make the hand waving emoji on click, right? That requires JavaScript. I mean,
maybe.
I mean, you could do it with like CSS, maybe. I mean, you could, but whatever. All that aside, like, if you wanted to do it with JavaScript, right. Let's say that requires JavaScript to have a click handler. And the point is, like, Astro gives you some tooling to be able to say, hey, only load this JavaScript at, like, based on a media query, or when it scrolls into view, or when the page loads, or whatever, you know? So you can have, I think, I don't know how many states that they have, but they definitely have no JavaScript at all, or like only run it at build time. And then they have run it when the page loads. They have run it based on like the screen size of certain media queries, or run it when this, or like download it, or like load the JavaScript when the component is in view.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. It basically relies on, the code pen is interesting if you want to take a look, but basically relies on an intersection observer that then goes to a CDN and gets React and React DOM. And then it does the whole like, hey, React, this is the button that I want you to build, and add, like, mount that onto this div with a specific data attribute. It's fascinating. It's a cool concept.
It is. This is neat. Okay, I see what they did. And the blog post actually consumes that pattern in code. That's really neat. Cool. Yeah, I saw it. I saw it load the bit that's rendered with React as I scrolled down. That's that's shockingly effective. So, right. My stance isn't changed by this. I do think this is the future. However, I don't think it's quite ready for, like, I don't want to say production, because I think that's overused. I don't think it's ready for enterprise consumption, if that makes sense, where the build tooling and like legacy applications that need to be run through this, it would probably have a hard time with that. I also think that there's a lot of benefit to the user beyond just, if it's not on the page, we don't load it. What if it's on the next page and loading it on idle? Right. So,
that's another option that Astro has.
So this is something that Next and Gatsby got really right, which is when you run these in a primarily static way. So when you run Next export, what ends up shipping down the wire is a bundle with all of your code. It can be route split, whatever. But what also comes down there is your content that hydrates the application, split into the different pages. And so you get your initial kind of JSON blob of the content that renders the page that you're on. And then you can preload the next page's content when you hover on a link or at idle. So, like, I think those performance benefits, as far as like very snappy page transitions, with some like idle state loading in the browser, is like, those are really, really slick. And that's stuff that at the level of, you know, marketing sites that generally large teams of developers are building, that's a much more attractive proposition than, you know, something that I could never explain to, you know, the business interest as being worthwhile, which is like preventing as much JavaScript from coming down the line. Because here's the thing, right? This doesn't so much solve the problem. Ooh, I've actually got something that might be interesting.
Oh my gosh.
So this doesn't so much solve the problem of third-party JavaScript, which is primarily what hurts performance, right? We agree on this. It's not so much like irresponsible developers, you know, putting out 1.4, 1.3 megabyte applications. That exists for websites, but I don't think that's the primary problem. I think the primary problem is third-party stuff to track users. And who was doing this? I think it might have been Zach Johnson. No, I don't think it was him. somebody that I pay attention to was creating a way to load this load third-party scripts using
service workers.
Service workers. Did you show this to me?
I don't know, but I did see that. It's so cool.
So this was an idea that I had thought up when I first heard of service workers, but didn't understand enough about them to know if it was even possible or not, and frankly didn't take the time to even look into it. But the fact that it's possible and the fact that that tooling is being built makes me incredibly happy.
But service workers pulling in... Well, so I guess the idea is like that takes the work off the main thread.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So doesn't hurt performance as much. However, I can see some issues with building that into kind of this concurrency model or this kind of streams or parallel model. Like, it creates potential gaps in user tracking, which is primarily what those scripts are for, right? Like, I know in one application that I built, it was mandated that I not load the application until the user's segment had been identified. Like, right. We put this before we injected the React application. It was absolutely nasty, but it was required.
Yeah.
So that we
gotta do what you gotta do.
Never missed an opportunity to market.
Well, that was a lot.
I think this stuff is neat.
Yeah, and that was the original point. It's like, it's not about having an opinion. I think that the way that it's implemented is really interesting. Because if you look at the code here, you have basically an intersection observer that when your little target div comes onto the screen, it goes out to a CDN and pulls down React at that point. And then, you know, attaches that to the DOM. Presumably, if you had two, like, you essentially have, you know, that idea of micro front ends or like islands of miniature front ends. So if you have two buttons, and then they both need the React library to render, and you scroll down to the first one, it's going to go and get React, and then it's going to render it, and then you're going to have your component there. And then when you scroll to the next one, it's going to make the same request to go and get the React library, but it's going to pull that from your cache. So then you just have React right there. And so you really, the only overhead there would be the actual code to render your like second button. I don't know. It was interesting. I will say that I think that in response to your comments about loading things when it's idle, I think that, Astro does have a mechanism as well for pulling down the JavaScript when the work is available. And also Jason Langsdorf had he rebuilt his blog recently and did a case study on building it in, he either had Next or Gatsby originally, and then he moved it to Astro.build, and it was like a ridiculous difference in performance in terms of number of requests and the latency for those number of requests, the size of those downloads, and the latency.
Interesting.
Not that, you know, I don't know. A lot of developers like to get too hung up on the performance metric stuff. Like,
yeah. What else are we going to do, right?
Yeah, it's funny. It's to me, my stance is that the speed game, like it follows the law of diminishing returns. It's the same with like the new Apple laptops. Like, yeah, I currently am on an Asus with an Intel processor, and like upgrading processors could make my work faster, but most of my time is not spent waiting on my code to run, you know, or to compile or to process. Like when I'm running tests, like, yeah, I think testing could happen faster. That'd be nice.
All of my tests happen in CI.
Like, you don't run tests locally?
I tend not to. I mean, I tend not to do that type of development. I'm actually developing mostly against CI. So running that locally gets a little bit sketchy with some subtle mismatching. So,
Yeah, I mean, I'll do both. Like, if especially if I see a test fail in CI, then I definitely want to run it locally and see what the heck happened. But
yeah,
speaking of testing, I want to check out this new library called Uvu.
Uvu.
Uvu. I don't know.
That was like a video streaming service. Oh, that was Vudu.
Voodoo.
Whatever.
I don't know. Because honestly, like, I'm getting over Jest and the whole, like, well, the incompatibility with ES modules kills me. I just want to do everything in ES modules, and the whole, like, there's like, we're still in a stage where there's like the ES module common JS divide, and like Webpack is the same thing. Webpack wants to consume common JS.
So this relates to so many problems that I'm currently having, which is that the bundler scene, as mature as it is, feels like an absolute wreck. And not so, like, there's not a single piece of tooling to me that feels like it makes sense. And that's not the fault of the tooling. That's the fault, I think, of
you,
the browser scene. Like, the platform has scattered the target, and I can blame Safari for that. You can't really blame Internet Explorer anymore.
I need you to elaborate on that. How are the browsers making the, how are the browsers,
you mentioned ES modules, yeah,
build tools, yeah, yeah, ES modules are now natively available. Yes,
all browsers.
Not all browsers.
This is the problem.
So you're talking about Safari.
When we have a scattered target, we're something like 80% of a site's traffic is going to be picked up on one of these, and I'm holding up a new iPhone, right? Well, okay, not the new iPhone, the slightly old iPhone. I can't use another browser on that, and I use the internet a lot on there, and all the websites need to work on that. And so if I have a scattered target where ES modules work for only 60% of my traffic, it doesn't work for me, period, full stop.
So, I mean, it looks like ES modules are not supported in IE11 or Opera Mini, but otherwise it's pretty green across the board for
Safari.
Safari, yeah. Safari on iOS. Safari and Safari on iOS. And basically every other browser running in Safari and on iPhones is Safari under the hood.
Interesting. I had a different impression.
Yeah. So I think it's safe to use ES modules if you wanted to in your script tags. I think that there is some tooling challenges. Like the reason why we aren't just using the whole, like, everyone just use ES modules from like a CDN or whatever, is because you get into some really complicated waterfall effects where if you have a module A that requires module B, mm-hmm, and module B requires module C and module C requires module A or something like that, you can get into some weird, I don't know if you get into infinite loops, but you get into some weird like network waterfall problems.
Yeah, circular references become very problematic.
Yeah, where it makes more sense. I think the standard today, the gold standard for build tools, is probably going to be something like V, where they will use ES modules in development because it's super quick and snappy. And so each one of your modules that you require is like a different script tag, which is why it can reload in a fraction of a second. But then at build time, it builds everything back up into a single bundle. Or, you know, if you have code splitting, it'll separate them. I think that's still kind of where we are today. But yeah, I agree. As far as like your comments on build tools, I'm right there with you. The whole Webpack thing that I was mentioning, it's really tough because Webpack is still on common JS, which means you have to use the like require and export or module.exports syntax. Rollup uses ES modules, which is nice. Vite uses rollup under the hood, which means...
So does NX. NX is what we've built our monorepo around, and that's using rollup.
Okay, yeah.
Which is nice.
But man, doing like... The thing that really gets me is building build tools. So I am working on this CSS library that we've talked about briefly a couple of times.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a pain. Like the things that I'm trying to do are basically read a JavaScript file and from some of the contents of that JavaScript file, dynamically generate a CSS file. And also modify that JavaScript file to replace it with like essentially a string of class names.
Okay.
And it's hard. I'm actually going to commission someone to build the plugin for me. Like I've got the Babel logic working to do all of that. But the problem that I have is I don't know how to tell tools like Webpack or Rollup that as it's reading through all of the JavaScript files that it's traversing through the application, it also needs to treat my CSS like a dynamic file that is changing as well. So what happens is when you run the build command, I basically ship my library with an empty CSS file. As your build tools go through your JavaScript files and they see the references to my library that say what CSS should be there, it does inject it into my CSS file, but for some reason, when the build tool wanted to build the CSS or wants to build the production CSS, it's still using the empty file. It's not using the built-up file. And it has something to do with the solution.
Why not build it in memory and then write it when everything's done?
Yeah, that's basically the solution. It has something to do with building out virtual modules. I don't know anything about that. It's weird.
Is this an attempt at tree shaking?
Like tree shaking? This is not tree shaking. No, because
you're trying to just ship what is referenced in the JS, yeah?
Yes. And I have to build that out into memory. And then at the end of the build pipeline, I need to read from memory that I need to read that into a virtual file and then import or inject that virtual file into the build tool.
But it's ensuring that all of the correct references are intact.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. That's an easy part. I already have figured out. Yeah, so I did it for Babel. I tried doing it for Webpack. Pain in the ass.
Yes.
Mostly because I just want to work with ES modules. I don't want to do common JS anymore. And it's so hard. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to transition. Originally, I was like, okay, let me build this to target the broadest landscape of existing tools. That would make it easier for people to integrate the library into their projects. But then I realized, one, it's going to be a pain in the ass to do that because Webpack is, I think, going to be the largest landscape. And two, people probably aren't going to change their existing code to add something new. So instead, I think what I want to do is target a Vite plugin, which is effectively a rollup plugin. And so if I do rollup in Vite, then I can still hit like existing projects that are using rollup. And then any new project going forward, I kind of see the landscape trending towards using Vite because it's a really awesome developer experience.
Yeah.
And just go from there.
I think that makes sense. And I think what you're trying to do is like, you have now kicked me off trying to find some sort of solution to it. I'm like, there's gotta be somebody else who has done this. Cause like, I understand what you're saying and yeah, there's some problems there. Anyway.
Oh yeah, I found a project that does it actually, and I was looking at the source code, but it's all written in TypeScript, and I don't want to do that either. Like I don't know, it's just so complicated. Because here's the thing, here's the problem with that. is if I start with TypeScript, then I have to have a build command that then takes my TypeScript and builds it back to CommonJS. And then I have to deploy my library as the built files. And like, that's just too much work, man. Just keep it simple. Just ES modules, JavaScript, done. No builds, no build steps. No compilation.
Hang on.
Here we go. Your thinking face is on.
Yes, config. I can't use my Windows computer.
Do I need to stop the recording?
No. So I believe you can build target ES modules in TypeScript, but I need to find the way to do it. ES module interop.
Okay. Yes, I could do that. But the point is, if I just want to write ES modules, then I don't need TypeScript to build ES modules, because I can just start with ES modules.
I just think the idea that you ran into TypeScript and you were like, no.
No, okay. Like, ran away. Okay, that's fair. No, I did see the TypeScript files and I was like, okay, let me try, right? Like, I'll take that. I'll just like convert it to to CommonJS by hand and whatever. And the problem is, so many of these libraries are just so much code that it's like, not only do I like it, it's like it takes twice as long to read someone else's code than it does to write, if you were to write it from scratch, you know, because you basically have to like figure out what the entry point is, and then you have to figure out what the entry point is trying to do, and then all of the dependencies that entry needs. And then you have to like one by one go to those and do the exact same thing and figure out what is the purpose of this part of the code. And
yeah, but is that even necessary? Instead of inferring all of that, you have types to tell you what the structure of all of that data is expected to be as it travels through the code, which I think makes that reasoning easier.
Not what it's intended to do.
Absolutely it is. It's documentation. You use it as documentation in JSDoc. Anyway,
it's not the same thing. It's not the same thing. Like, if I'm trying, we have a plugin that does something, and I want to take it. I basically want to fork it and have it do something else. I need to figure out what is the minimum amount of code that I need to change to get like just the parts that I need, and then swap. Like, what do I need to swap out? And without knowing how it's all architected and like what the developer was thinking, you know, I don't know. It's a lot.
So there's an approach to doing that, and I believe they call it fuck around and find out.
Yeah. I use the same approach at the bar when I've had a few too many to drink and someone starts talking crap.
Oh, man.
Feisty, man.
Getting rowdy.
No. Yes, I don't know. Anyway, I think the goal right now is get a Vite plugin. I'm going to commission someone to build that out, very basic proof of concept, and then I'll get to cracking, and then I can ship something.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so yeah, I think in general, like your approach to that is very forward thinking. That seems right to me.
Yeah, it seems like a shame that like it was like several months ago that I actually got it working in development mode, because in development mode has no problem, like a Webpack dev mode has no problem seeing that a file has changed and reacting to that change. It's only in build that it has the problem. And so when I got it working, oh man, I was on the moon. I was like on cloud nine. Because it was so cool. It's so cool to see it working.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, I'm glad there's progress.
Yeah, slow, very slow and steady. I think that's all I got to talk about. You got anything you want to get on?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, nothing productive, so no.
We can talk about non-productive stuff too.
I don't know. So I did that bike race a couple weeks ago now. That was painful and gnarly.
Yeah.
And I would recommend that anybody who is into type 2 fun do that. You'd be very into that. Type 2 fun. Like, so type 1 fun is just fun. Things that are fun in the moment while you're there. It is fun.
Real fun.
Real fun. Okay. I don't disagree with that definition at all. Type 2 fun is the type of fun where when you look back, so like in retrospect, it's fun. So this is like a trip with a tight schedule, right? You're in the trip. It's not really fun because you're stressed out. You're going out. You're making sure you see all the sights. You're doing this. Yeah. Like in the moment, it kind of sucks. So like I had a trip to Rome that was like that, where it's like, we got to go see the Colosseum, and we got to go see a this and a that and a Vatican. I don't know. I hated it while I was there, but I look back on that trip fondly, right? It's type 2 fun. Same kind of thing, except the level of misery in type 2 fun with like sports is very, very high. My legs were cramping up like from mile 35 until the end. It was like 53 miles of racing.
Ooh.
It was absolutely wild, but I finished somewhere like middle of the pack. Like I did what I could, and I had kind of an accurate expectation of the outcome, and it's good. But I'm actually doing another race this weekend.
Hey, I'm proud of you for doing that one, man. That's a lot. And I'm proud of you for doing another one after all that. There was a lot of complaining.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this one I'm doing this weekend is a bit of a different format. It'll be maybe 11 miles.
Okay. So sprint.
But it's mostly like downhill. So it's a format called enduro racing. And so what this means is your climbs are not timed. And then you do descents down kind of gnarlier trails, and those are timed. And then you like climb back up to the next stage. So this has three stages. So it'll probably be like maybe 11, 12 miles in total.
So they don't time you doing the uphill.
Nope. Cause that,
and they just time the part that gravity does all the work.
Yeah.
And so it's called enduro.
It's called enduro. And so there's a series that just wrapped up, Enduro World Series. It's like a global competition for this. Anyone can enter. It's really, really a cool format because the skills required to do it. Yeah, it's downhill racing, but like downhill mountain bike racing, you take like a ski lift up. This one, you ride your bike up. And so like the trails that you do are a little bit different than downhill as well. Like downhill gets really, really steep and really gnarly. So does
presumably enduro. this gets more dangerous as you go because fatigue starts to kick in.
Yeah, yeah.
Start making bad decisions.
Yeah, I'm sure by my third run on Sunday, I'll be just ready to crack my helmet open. It'll be fun.
Cool. I mean, not that you get hurt, but
my goal is to just generally avoid death. But it seems like fun. So we'll see. Cool.
Well, you'll have to let me know how it goes.
Well, do you have any shout outs?
Yeah. Let's move on to shout outs. I do have shout outs usually. I'm gonna wait till you go first.
Well, that's a good question because I have like nothing prepared.
Okay. I'm going to pick a shout out for, I don't know if I've done this before. Let me just mark it off now. There's a service called Better Uptime. And I use it for my uptime monitoring. And it works really well. I think they have like a pretty good pricing model where they'll give you like 10 free. Let me see. Is it betteruptime.com? Yeah, and they're pretty cool. They'll give you up to 10 monitors for free. They'll give you email alerts. I guess the difference between this one and some of the other monitoring services that I've seen are that they do down to 3-minute checks. So they send a ping every 3 minutes. And if it detects downtime, they might have like only if it detects two in a row or something like that. They even have a service where they'll like call you, and they have Slack integration. I liked it. It worked pretty well for the things that I need. If you need more than 10 monitors, you know, you can either pay or use a different service. Like I think Uptime Robot does up to 50, but I thought this one had really good features for what I need.
Cool. That seems great. Seems very useful. I still don't have a shout out. I'm so terrible at this. So I saw something on Twitter this week, and I think it's been released, but it maybe hasn't. So Jason Lingsdorf was updating one of his egghead courses. So my shout out will just be check out Jason's offering on Egghead. He has lots of great courses. A lot of it's around Gatsby. And I think he may have been updating his Gatsby course. I don't know. But that stuff is definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, I always thought it'd be cool to get into doing courses.
There's part of me that's like, yeah, I would love to do that, because I love teaching, and I love preparing to teach. I love paring down ideas and simplifying and trying to make analogies to have it fit in people. Like, I love doing that. But at the same time, that is a huge pain in the ass to develop,
yeah,
like on a regular basis. Like, it is so much work.
Yeah.
And doing it well is very, very difficult. And I think that there are a lot of people who do the kind of courses that I would want to make. There's a lot of people who build them very well. So
I just, there's always room for more people to make learning material. You know, I really don't like that take that people are like, oh, this already exists. You don't need to create another tutorial or write another article about it.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. I disagree with myself 3 seconds ago.
What? Oh, that
the take that we're both like, no, nah, that's a bad take. Yeah. For sure.
All right. Cool, man. Well, that's the show. Thanks for chatting again. Thanks for the coaching me through my burnout conversation last week. I hope you can tell that I'm already feeling a lot better about things.
Yeah, it smells like you've showered. It's nice.
Dang, all the way from San Diego?
Yeah. Like, subscribe. What are the other tropes that people do?
Are you supposed to smash?
Yeah. Smash that like button.
Yeah.
It's not just smash. That's not it.
Crush it.
Crush that like button.
Destroy it. Explode it. Yeah, that's it. Share it with your friends. Share it with your grandma. Get some little headphones.
Grandmas love us.
Yeah. Put it on your dog, some little doggy headphones, and just put the show on. They'll be stoked. All right, man. Talk to you next time.
Bye.
You know, it would be cool. I've been thinking we should redo the website.
We have a website?
We have a website.
That's terrible.
Why? The fncall.com, baby.